Welcome to The Equestrian Experience, a show where we talk about what happens behind the rosettes and what we tried so that you don't have to. In a world first, we and our guests openly share what we know from our extensive equestrian experience. This includes our exclusive access to our global experts such as high performance, national vets, coaches, farriers, and even brands. If you're new here, consider subscribing. We're your hosts, Amanda Ross and Bex Mason, and today we're talking to my personal vet, very good friend, and incredible Crown Equine Veterinary Service veterinarian, Christine Demery. Welcome, Christine, and hello, Bex. How are you both?
I'm really well. Hello, Christine. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you this morning.
Hi, Amanda. Hi, Bex. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. Just looking forward to the chat.
Well, we have so many questions. Like Bex and I, we always have millions of questions. But just firstly, so you are from Ireland. Can you just briefly tell us when you came out to Australia and how you became a vet over here?
Yeah, so I qualified in 2006 from University College Dublin, and I did my 4 years of work in Ireland, and then I decided to spread my wings a bit and do a bit of traveling to Australia. Came over here, got a job in a lovely clinic up in New South Wales, and one thing led to another, and I never went home, really, except for holidays, and I've been here since. So, yeah, that was 11 years ago now, and now I'm on the beautiful Mornington Peninsula working for Crown Equine Veterinary Services. So, yeah, it's been great.
Oh, I have to say, that's just the dream.
Now, Bex, you have to come over as well, considering you've got family over here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first time I went over, Christine, I mean, I wanted to do the same and stay forever. And I've been back 4 times now and I still haven't managed to stay. So I'm looking for all the excuses and connections. So next time I do come over, there's no going home for me. Stay in the sunshine. You guys stay in your 28 degree and me in my minus 4 degrees.
Don't worry, it's only a matter of time. We're in Melbourne. It'll be cold again. So, Christine, now we're having a chat about some veterinary topics. And, you know, you and I decided that one of the most common things, and I know that's one of the reasons you and I are such good friends, is lameness. So, first of all, can you tell us what is lameness in a horse?
So in the basic terms, lameness is a term used to describe a change in a horse's gait, and that's often due to pain in one or several limbs. So, and this it may present anything from limping to a subtle change in gait to just poor performance. So it's quite wide ranging. It's certainly one of the things we deal with most commonly, and it's a most common cause of poor performance in our sort of equine athletes.
Okay. And is it different to, like, I know when I get out of bed in the morning, I'm a little bit stiff and I probably wouldn't trot up that well. But is like early morning stiffness or older horse stiffness, is that the same as lameness or is it a different thing?
I think stiffness is lameness. It just depends on whether someone, a horse works out of it or not. Okay. Like they can certainly have take a little bit of time to warm up, which is why we all do warm ups in our horses, or we should do warm ups in our horses if you're not doing them, and allowing the muscles to heat up, like to warm up, and allowing the joints to, especially on cold mornings and things like that, and certainly for older horses. But if your gait abnormality is consistent and is staying consistent throughout, then you've got a lameness. You don't just have a bit of stiffness.
Okay. So if we're watching our horse and they're showing signs that they might not be quite 100% sound, like, when do we make the call to ring the vet?
Well, that can be a sort of wide-ranging reasons. Like, I think the emergency calls we get certainly are horses with an acute lameness and quite a severe lameness. And there are things you pretty much always want to call a vet for, like apart from, well, one of the most common things being a foot abscess that sometimes can be treated by your farrier. And there are reasons you have to sort of assess whether you've had to have a sound horse one day and a hopping lame one with a banging pulse to its foot and a hot foot and a bit of pain on testers, and you call the farrier and they can't find anything. So then you call the vet. We certainly see lameness, like foot abscesses plenty as well. But you definitely, if it's not showing something like that or showing those signs, then you could be dealing with something more significant like a fracture or a joint septus, and that certainly requires a vet. On the other hand, any lameness that your horse doesn't warm up out of and that you feel is actually affecting their performance, or you can notice all the time. If you can notice it, the horse can feel it, and that horse will be uncomfortable in its work, whether it pushes through it or not. And I certainly think that instead of sitting on something, you're usually better off getting your vet in, assessing them, and then gauging from them whether they think you need to go further forward and do a full lameness exam and diagnostics or not. And then mm-hmm. the other thing is just general poor performance. The lameness exam is certainly the top of our list of things to do in a general poor performance exam when you can't figure out why your horse is not performing to its best or its performance has changed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what do you do in a lameness exam? So if I know what happens.
I'm very good at them, I must say.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like, the protocol, what, Amanda, as do I. but let's let our listeners know.
Exactly. So you know, you have a client that rings up and says, you know, Christine, I think my horse isn't quite right. He looks a little bit lame. What happens there? What's the first thing they need to tell you? And then what's the process from there on?
So I think the first stage, once we're engaged to do a lameness exam, we go out to somebody's property and they come in to us. The first thing we want to know is a history. When did the lameness, when did you first notice the lameness? How severe was the lameness when you first noticed it? Has it gotten better? Has it gotten worse? Did it progress? Does it get worse with work? Does it get better with work? Is it worse on a soft surface? Is it worse on a hard surface? Taking into account circles, what your horse normally looks like, what their gait is normally like, and the general sort of use of the horse, and like what particular discipline you're doing that may have exacerbated it. So pretty much just lots of information about your normal and then what's gone wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay. And from there, then once we've sort of established that, then we perform a clinical exam. So we go over the horse, we look over its conformation, assess that, especially if we don't know the horse, it's very good to look at it from a, like a whole horse point of view, assess what, like palpate all their limbs, assess if there's any swellings in the joints, any heat, any pulses to the feet, apply hoof testers, see if we can find any pain that way. And it's just little pinchers that you use to go around the sole of the foot and the heels mm-hmm. to see if we can get any reaction, because that's abnormal. And it just allows us to sort of really get a good overall view of that animal. And the more you know about what your horse's normal is, like we could look at an effusion or look at a swelling in a joint and say, well, do they have that always, or has that changed? Was that less? Has it gotten more? So yeah, lots of information about your horse and what they usually look like is really, really beneficial for us. Mm-hmm. Then we move on to evaluating horse's movement. So we look at it walk away, look at it walk back, assess its gait. Then we look at the horse trotting in a straight line. And if you can trot your horse in a straight line, that's also really, really great. Because you would be surprised how many people cannot actually trot their horse in a straight line. Or they trot in front of the horse, or the horse trots on them, or the horse runs away, or the horse trots all over the walk. So that kind of stuff, like a bit of pre-training with your horse, really benefits us.
When you're trotting up the horse for the vet, is there like a certain pace you like him to go? Do you like to trot quite quickly? Do you like him to trot quite slowly?
I think straightness is really good. I think a forward moving trot is good. I think it depends on who you're getting to trot up. Adventurers tend to trot really well, but they trot really fast because they're used to trotting really fast because they're trying to keep that horse moving forward and looking as sound as possible in a trot up.
Yep. So Bex, I can tell you, if you want to make them look sound, you trot them at different paces depending if you want the front or the back that's got a problem, and you have to keep their poll below the wither so that the head doesn't nod.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's lots and lots of tricks. And we have to run really fast because in an official trot up, you're not allowed to hold their head. And I guarantee you, when you turn them around after you've gone around the pop plant at the top, they full on just leg it back to the stables and you cannot run fast enough.
So you don't hold on to the head because you don't want to affect their movement, I guess.
Yeah, because obviously when you are trotting a horse in a straight line, a lot of forelimb lameness is we are looking at head movement and head carriage and how that head moves related to the limbs.
Right.
And that's part of our evaluation. So if you can get and have an area with a horse on a nice firm surface and you can pick the horse up and get it to trot in a straight line at a nice even tempo, then that's really great. And listen, if we need to slow it down, you just ask and then you go again. So yeah, you've got to be prepared to do a bit of running when your vet arrives.
That is one thing I've done for vettings, and I find myself more out of breath than the horse many a times. And they're like, and again, and again. One more question for you, Christine, before we move on to the next bit, is when you're trotting the horse away, I've been told you move the horse away from you to turn at the end. Is that correct?
I think that's just a safety thing, really. I think that you're not turning the horse on top of you, so you get planted if the horse, like, or you get stood on. I think that's something I was taught in Pony Club, really, is that you go away and you push the horse away from you so that if the horse gets startled or something like that, that it's not going to jump on top of you. And certainly sometimes we'll say to someone, listen, could you actually turn the horse towards you or turn the horse the other direction, because we want to see what that inside limb looks like on the turn. So that's sort of an individual thing, but ideally, yes, turn the horse away from you for safety more than anything else. It's not a vet thing.
Right. Yeah.
So is that usually like in an eventing trot up or the FEI official trot ups, you have to walk them like 4 meters, like halt them in front of the ground jury, then walk them 4 meters, trot them up to the end, then walk them before the turn, and there's a pot plant. You have to turn right around the pot plant so that the vet sees only the horse. You don't have the handler between the vet and the horse, and then straighten them up, then trot them all the way back. So is that also what you like to see to make sure that you're not missing an inside lameness if you turned left with the handle?
Yeah, as long as you can look at the horse and fully assess the horse itself and not the handler. There can be any problem. The handler can be quite distracting.
So is there a clothing recommendations for the handler?
Ooh, this is always a really interesting one. Like, over the years, it's amazing what people turn up to lameness exams in. It probably shouldn't really shock me at this stage, but it always kind of makes me scratch my head a little bit, because one thing is, like, just be prepared that you're going to actually trot your horse up. So I've arrived at lameness exams and somebody says, oh, I just had knee surgery 2 days ago. And then you're like, well, How are we going to do the trot up if you can't trot? So if you're incapacitated, please have somebody there that can actually do the running, and have the horse sort of able to do the running. It sort of shortens the whole process a little bit. If your horse can trot in a straight line, if it can lunge, and it's not going to like fly away on us or just stand there looking at us, try to have some like reasonably sensible footwear. People turn up in like the middle of summer in Australia in a pair of thongs, and that's like, well, flip flop translation for Bex there.
I know. I was thinking pants.
And I have literally turned up to vettings and told someone to go into their house and change their shoes. Because running in flip flops or thongs is not safe at all, and makes me very frustrating. So make sure that you're prepared to run. And like, I've had people turn up in thongs, women run away, and they don't wear the right underwear for trotting horses up. And this sounds a little like a bit of a weird request, but please, if you're reasonably well endowed breasts, please wear a really good bra when you're trotting up. This is really distracting. I trot my horse and they're trying to hold on to their boobs at the same time, or they're pulling their pants up because their pants don't have a belt on them, or all of these kind of weird things. So yeah, good underwear, good shoes, and you're pretty much right to go.
That reminds me, that's so funny. Well, I did Adelaide 3-day 1 year, and it was an unexpected 43 degrees. And I now know that any time, and all of you eventers out there that are listening to this, when you choose your trot up outfit, run in it. you have to practice. And I know it's weird in the shop, but you have to run in it. So anyway, I had jeans and it was too hot. So I decided I had this like nice kind of mini skirt. It wasn't too short, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, by the time I ran up the other end of the trot up, the goddamn thing had ridden up so high, it may as well have been a second belt. So I spent the whole time trying to pull my skirt down so that it didn't end up like fully like over my bum up the wrong way. So yeah, you have to practice running in the outfit.
Yeah, very scarring for the vets. The poor vets. It's terrible.
Scarred for life, the poor vets.
That's a nice distraction if the horse isn't quite sound.
That's where the adventurers come in. They're pretty switched on to that kind of stuff. Yep. You don't want to be distracting your vet when they're doing a lameness evaluation, so you're paying them to be there.
Yeah.
Yep. So, no, that's right. Male ground jury and a lame horse means a high skirt and a low top. But the vets at home, yeah, no, we don't do that. Oh, God, we need to move on, don't we? So we've done the trotting up, Christine. Where do we go from the trotting up in the straight line?
Yeah, trotting up in a straight line, baseline look at the horse and seeing how it's moving behind and in front. Trotting away, most of the time we evaluate behind. Trotting back, in front, that's where you see most of your lameness, especially when you're looking for subtle things. Every vet does things slightly differently. I usually perform flexion tests at that point. So I'll do forelimbs, upper limb and lower limb independently. And then I'll do hind limbs, sometimes lower limb dependently and sometimes everything together, kind of depending on what I'm looking at and what I've seen in my baseline trot up. And then from there, I usually move on to lunging the horse on a firm surface. So about a 10-meter circle on a firm surface, left and right, both reins, just to see if the lameness changes. Because something that looks good, like looks okay in a straight line, can look very, very different on a circle. And again, another safety thing is have done that with your horse before, because I've had some pretty hairy experiences over the years trying to lunge a horse on a firm circle and they slip or they feel insecure or that kind of thing. So having a bit of practice at it, I find really beneficial. And confidence for the rider as well, the person presenting the horse, that they know how to do that and know kind of what's going on.
Can I ask about, you know, with the flexion test, and you were saying that you do, lower limb and upper limb. So you're differentiating between flexing, say, the knee and the fetlock. You don't flex up the whole forelimb at once. Is that right?
Yeah, because if you flex up the whole forelimb at the same time, then if you're getting a response, you're not quite sure which area it's coming from. In the forelimb, differentiating upper limb and lower limb is much easier because the joints don't all flex together. So you can quite confidently flex from the knee up, and you're not flexing or stressing the lower joints. And then you would flex the fetlock down, so you're flexing the fetlock, the pastern, and the coffin joint all at the same time. So you're getting and it's really just, flexion tests are just a guide. It just aids giving us a little bit of information. Just because your horse flexes up positive doesn't mean that's where the lameness is coming from, but it's the only way we have of assessing those structures without the horse pointing at it and saying it hurts here.
And how long do you hold the leg up for?
I think that ranges from vet to vet. Some people hold it for 60 seconds. Some people hold it for 30. I usually go on the 30 side because I feel like the 60 is just a little bit long and doesn't give you it's probably too much time for me. But that will vary from vet to vet. So anywhere from 30 to 60 seconds.
And what are you looking for when the horse trots off? I know that you said like you'll obviously for it to be unsound, but if it's like equally unsound on both forelimbs, would you then just not really worry about that?
No, because that will give you some really good extra information. If you feel like the horse is sort of may have a bilateral lameness, the flexion test may actually exacerbate that lameness in one limb. If you get a couple of short strides when you flex a horse and let them trot off, then that's a pretty acceptable response. But a consistent sort of 5 to 6 strides, I would say, is a positive response to flexion test. And then you go and do the other limb and you might get a positive response on that side. And that gives you an indication that you're dealing with something bilateral.
Interesting.
And then hind limb is a little bit different because, like, you can keep the limb quite low to the ground and flex the fetlock independently if that's the area that you're concerned about. Mm-hmm. But you can't actually, the whole hind limb, when you flex that limb up, you're flexing the fetlock, the hock, the stifle, and the hip joint all at the same time. So it's a less specific flexion test. Mm.
Mm-hmm. God. And I know that with mine, well, I've had lots of instances where when it's quite sound and quite fine, they trot off quite well. I don't know about you, Bex, but with a couple of them that if they've been a bit sore and they trot off and get so angry and we get bucking and we get biting and we get all sorts of shenanigans. So I do feel sorry for you vets loaded up at the back leg on, you know, bent and holding a 30-second hind leg sometimes. I think that's like the worst place to be.
It can be a bit of fun, and that's why I have a count to three rule. So if I usually when I'm letting a limb down, I'll say 1, 2, 3, go. And if you go before three, you get into a bit of trouble with me because three means I'm away and I'm far enough away that that hind limb isn't going to connect with my head.
Oh God, it's just a very dangerous place. Once we've done the trot up in the straight line, then with flexions, then we've done the circles, where do we go to there? So let's say we find something. Let's say we have, what should we choose? Positive off or fetlock, front leg.
So if you have just a positive flexion test, then that's a mild bit of information. But if you have an actual, I think most of what we're trying to do in this lameness movement assessment is establish which leg is lame or which leg is a predominant lameness. So once you actually have a lame limb and you've picked it. So you might say, okay, I've got a consistent 3 out of 5 right forelimb lameness or a 2 out of 5 right forelimb lameness. And you've established that you can see that well enough that you feel like you can make a difference to that if you move on in your assessment. So I think most of the time after the movement assessment, I have a good chat to the owner about what I've found and I run through the history again and I say, right, well, I have found a right forelimb lameness. We've got positive we've got no reaction on hoof testers, but we do have a moderate fetlock effusion. So we've got some swelling in that joint and fluid filling in that joint. And we've got some positive to flexion test. You'd be like, well, that's likely, or that's indicating that may be our source of lameness. But we really don't want to guess because that elongates the whole process. And we want to take guessing out of the equation. So we like to confirm our lamenesses and confirm our suspicions. And often we do that through diagnostic analgesia or nerve blocks.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So like when you go to the dentist and they put a nerve block, they put a block into your tooth when you're getting a root canal or you're getting your tooth drilled. Mm-hmm. Very, very similar process. So
local anesthetic.
Local anesthetic. Mm-hmm. And we can, depending on what we find, you can either do that directly into the joint or you can do it around the nerve bundles that supply the limb. And in doing that, you have to start from the ground up because if you start too far up the limb, you end up just blocking out a whole big section of the limb and you're not localizing the structure properly. Mm-hmm. So we start at the foot and then we gradually work up the leg from there. And once we get rid of the lameness, which we've assessed in the beginning, then we can be more confident that lameness is coming from that area.
Okay. Right. So we all know that, like, I always get a little bit worried when I have a lame horse because I think, okay, how big is my vet bill going to be this time? I'm sure our listeners kind of think the same thing. Is there a point, ever look at the horse and then go, you know what, we'll just give this one a few days and see how it looks in a few days before we go into more examination?
Absolutely. And I think that's where the relationship with your vet comes in and being able to have really open discussion and communication and not having it one-sided. So the vet is aware of your expectations and what you want from the examination. So I have some people that say, listen, my horse is lame. I want to sort it out. I've got this event here in this amount of time. That horse has to be sound. So today we're going to get to the bottom of it and we're going to diagnose that and do everything that needs to be done. So then it's all guns blazing, away you go. You do your diagnostic nerve blocks, and then you go on and do your radiographs, and then you come up with a treatment plan. But some people aren't quite prepared for that or ready for that, or the lameness is just recent. So we might say, okay, well, let's give it a bit of time, or it might be something in the foot, or it might be indicating that way. So you might go, okay, let's get the farrier in, let's get them involved. Let's do a little bit of corrective shoeing and see how that goes. And maybe let's give the horse a little rest time, ice it, bring it for hand walks, don't let it out in the paddock, give it some bute for a short time, and then we do a re-examination at a later date. So it really just depends on what the owner is prepared for and what their expectations are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I know with phones and stuff, being so easy to communicate with you now, how much can you tell? Like, I know, Christine, if I've got something that's not quite right with the horses and I'm not sure what to do with it, the easiest thing for me is probably the most annoying thing for you, because I do it all the time, is to like take a photo or send you a video. So is that a helpful way to just at least get a bit of an idea rather than necessarily coming out straight away?
Absolutely. And I think it really aids your priority list. Like, if you send me a video of a horse that's lame, I'm like, I'll be there in half an hour, no worries. Or I'll shift a few things around and I'll come over. Or you're like, oh yeah, it's subtle, or it hasn't, especially if you know the horse really well. Mm. You know, as a vet, what that horse looks like and how that horse usually moves. And you can detect those subtle things. If it's videoed well and it's done well, then that's helpful. But if you're like videoing your horse from up on top of your, like, I've got these videos before, like,
really?
That's the only reason I say that.
From the top.
It's like you're holding a video and walking your horse and saying, what do you think is wrong with my horse? And I'm like, I have absolutely no idea what's wrong with your horse.
Oh my gosh.
I know, but he has a nice mane.
Yeah.
So Jennifer and Amanda are pretty good. She knows what I want to see. And like, somebody else is videoing the horse hunting, not that person themselves, or so very much depends on the quality of video. But yes, very helpful when done right. Absolutely. Yep.
So what's an intermittent lameness?
So this is a lameness that you see maybe under certain conditions. So it's not consistent, it's waxing and waning, it's coming and going. You see it on a hard surface, or you only see it when you're on a grass surface, or you only see it when you're out competing, or if you're at a location, you're like, well, I don't have a soft surface to lunge it on, but this is what it looks like there. Or even cantering abnormalities, like horses switching legs, or like chain, or like switching diagonals and things like that, or disuniting in the canter. All of those things, if I assess the horse and I go out and see it and I can't see what you're describing, having a video of it can be really helpful.
We're so lucky with technology nowadays, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. What sort of facilities do we need? So if I'm going to give the vet a call and say, look, can you come to me and check out the horse for lameness, what sort of facilities will we need for you guys to be able to assess that properly?
Like, to do a full, complete exam, it's really nice to have a sort of firm, even surface to trot the horse up. You want to make sure it's about like 50 meters long or something like that. You can have a slightly shorter. If it's really gravelly and stony, that's not ideal, because a horse hits a stone and has a lame step, so it's hard to interpret. Lovely having an area where you can safely do a 10 meter circle lunge on the firm surface, and you're not trying to dodge cars and floats and all those kind of things, or dogs or children, or
construction,
and like, obviously an arena is great. Like, it's wonderful, it's great to have an area where you can actually give the horse a lunge on the soft. Like, these are all ideals. Not everybody has them, but if you feel like your area is not suitable, and I go out and look at the horse and it's just in a paddock or it's in a field, and I'm like, I can't do much here. So give your vet a heads up about what your facilities are, and maybe it might be best to actually bring the horse to them or bring it to a friend's place, and that might speed the process up and save you having to pay for 2 call lights as well.
I've done it before, where I've actually putting the horse in the horse box and taking it to a pub car park so I could use their car park for a firm surface, because my surface isn't good enough. It's like, we're going to the pub.
Happy days for everyone.
Yeah.
Did it get sounder the more you drank?
Yeah, of course. Don't know if I did though.
It's fine. No.
Yeah, it's fine. Oh. You ride it.
And Christine, are we very helpful with you when you're doing the vetting? Do you, you know, sort of need the owner to be there with you? Like, what can we do? Or do we just sort of leave you alone when you're doing it? What's the role of the handler and the nervous owner?
Yeah, well, like I think the handler is super important. It's like we need information from you. Like, it's basically a puzzle we're trying to figure out, because we can't obviously have a chat to the horse about how they're feeling. So having you are the horse's voice, you know, as an owner. So you need to tell me as a vet what this horse normally looks like, how this horse normally performs, if it's changed. Like, the information and the history is absolutely vital to figuring out what's going on, especially with subtle lamenesses and things that are a little bit sort of on and off. And like, being able to do what we ask you to do as well, and being able to sort of calmly sort of discuss everything and have an open conversation, and we need to know from you what you want from us, you know. So it's a real collaborative relationship. I think if someone comes in as a vet and probably can be a bit too direct, or like, I think that the owner has to feel comfortable enough to be able to discuss everything with their vet.
Yeah. With some horses,
get the most out of it, you know.
I know with like some horses that have had previous injuries and things, that their gait may not be as normal. How would you know if what is your normal for your horse? What would you look for?
I think we have to be a bit careful about sort of what we count as normal, because if you're always used to your horse being lame or having an abnormal gait, then your normal is not necessarily my normal. And it may be normal for that horse, but is it okay for that horse to do what it's being asked to do with that lameness? So if it's just going to go out for a bit of a hack and it has the odd like bobby stride on a circle or something like that, and it's only been asked to go for an old hack down the road, then that's okay. But if you're asking that horse to compete at a high level, then it's very, very likely that that's going to affect that horse's performance, depending on how tough the horse is as well. You know, some horses, like any human athlete as well, like there's massive sort of parallels with that side of things. Some horses can have a very subtle lameness that really affects its performance, and some horses can have quite a significant lameness and still go out and do the job.
Yeah.
But it just depends on, I suppose, the horse's comfort level and the comfort level of the rider with that. Are they willing to go out and do that? And it's about knowing what it is. I think if you know what it is and that you're managing it, but when you don't know what it is and you don't know what you're dealing with, then I think that's the time to do something about it, because knowledge is power with everything.
Yeah. So it's just really important to know what your horse is doing, well, what you're asking your horse to do, as to, you know, how sound it is. And so we don't want a horse going around badminton that has any lameness issues at all, really.
Yeah, because it's amazing. Like, you've got a lot of things to consider as a vet, and a lot of responsibilities. You have a horse's welfare, but you also have the rider welfare. Because if that horse takes a misstep, or like, especially like in the racing industry, that side of things, like, it can be a bit scary having that. Like, there's quite a bit of responsibility on getting those horses right so that they're safe.
That's really interesting what you said about the horse's pain threshold as well. I have a mare in particular that she actually kicked herself, fractured her own splint bone behind, and was sound. And only when we actually started doing a little bit more work, I was like, there's something just not right. They scanned it and it was shattered into a million pieces. Still, like, happy as ever, like, even to palpate, she wasn't even that sore. And then I've got another horse who is very slight lameness behind, and you would think, I don't know, someone's put a bullet through his shoulder when you get in there in the morning, you know?
It's quite incredible the capacity of the horse to, they're individuals, you know. They really are like people. Like, some people are really, really tough, and some horses are really tough, you know. It's like, I've seen some pretty horses do some pretty amazing things with some pretty sort of considerable injuries that you're managing. You know, you're not sending a horse out there that's going to break, but injuries that like are like you're able to work with it. But it's, I think if you asked any human athlete, they'd probably tell you the same. But with horses, we have a responsibility to know what we're dealing with, because they can't vocalize it and they don't have a choice. So we as the riders are sitting on asking them to do it, but it's okay to ask them if we know what's going on and we know the horse really well. So that's when that relationship really between horse and rider comes into play.
Mm-hmm. And Christine, how important do you think it is to work in a team with other like physios and farriers, chiropractors, and all of the other people that are responsible for the wellness of the horse?
I think it can be really invaluable. Like, there's some lamenesses that are pretty straightforward and you just need, like, you've got some arthritis in a joint, you need a vet to go in and inject the joint and, you know, put it on some supplements and away you go. But it depends on the injury. And there's so many injuries that are incredibly complex and have a lot of other factors involved. And working, and especially like feet are a massive thing. Like, the relationship between your vet and your farrier is huge. I can't sort of underestimate that, like, vets really need to not piss farriers off and vice versa. Because it's really hard owner to be between that, you know, like, it's like you got to develop a relationship with people and know that a lot of vets have never put a shoe on and a lot of farriers have never nerve blocked a horse. So I think that understanding and that collaboration and being able to actually give the farrier a ring or give the physio a ring and say, oh, listen, I need a horse, like, I'd really like a horse to be shot this way. Can you do that? Is that possible? Or you've got a hind limb lameness and the horse has a really sore back as a result. So you give the physio a ring, like, I can inject a joint, but I can't fix its sore back when it needs some extra help from somebody else. Like, it really can be, you got to treat the whole horse rather than just the specific injury.
And Bex, you've got a pretty good team as well. I know sort of Christine and I also have like a good relationship with my farrier and the physio. Do you? You've got quite a few people on your team.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've realized over the years how important that is, you know, how an x-ray from your vet to go on to the farrier, x-ray of the foot to go to your farrier, for them to be able to fit even millimeters, if it's just out by millimeters, what's going on outside the hoof. That takes us back to our episode with Luke. I think that was episode 3 or something. It was absolutely incredible speaking with him, because what they see from the outside, they don't have x-ray vision, you know, but the vets work with your farriers, can get a sound horse. No hoof, no horse, as they say.
Absolutely. Yeah. The difference you can make when you are able to work together and communicate what you want and then what they can actually do, I think is invaluable.
Well, should we do some listener questions if these are ones that we haven't already gone through? Okay. So we have, what is the most common cause of lameness, or the top 3 most common causes?
Oh, well, I think you're like, as the most common cause that I see is the horse's foot. And what that is in the foot is sort of another thing altogether. But as Beck said, no hoof, no horse. And a lot of our lamenesses block to the feet. And that can be a wide range of things, from a foot abscess, solar bruising, navicular syndrome, all of the above. I used to love, as a new grad vet, being able to, sort of newer vet going out and blocking a lameness to the foot. But and I go, yes, I had to do one block and I find where it is and let's take some x-rays. And now I realize the limitations of x-rays in lameness in the feet. And you can find something on x-ray, but if you don't find anything on x-ray, then you've got to look other places and then you've got to work with your farrier. So definitely foot is very high up there. Arthritic changes always. The lower limb in horses is really predominantly where we see lameness. There's the amount of times I've had someone gone out and sort of said, oh, I think my horse is sore in the shoulder and I block it out to a fetlock or a foot. But the vast majority, like when you look at clinical studies of horses, lamenesses are from the knee down. Like, there are, especially in the forelimb. Hind limb, a little bit different. There's a little bit more going on higher up. Arthritic changes, very, very high up on the list. And then you're dealing with things like tendonitis, so injuries to tendons, injuries to suspensory ligaments, so tendonitis, desmitis, all of that kind of thing is up there, especially in performance horses. So I could go on. It's a big list.
Well, even if you look at the horse, I suppose the way they're put together, I mean, they've got such spindly little legs for the weight of their body. It's not surprising quite a lot of the injuries are in the lower limb.
Especially when they're standing on their fingernails.
Yeah.
You stretch them all out.
Yeah.
The weight of a 500-kilo horse standing on its fingernails is pretty incredible. They're an amazing animal, the capacity they have to actually do what they do. But then that comes with the capacity they have to break as well, unfortunately.
Yeah.
God. Yeah, absolutely. And is it different from, so are there young horse injuries versus old horse injuries, or, you know, paddock horse hacking out horses versus performance horse injuries?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think when you're talking about sort of paddock horses and that kind of thing, like, we tend to deal with like things like foot abscesses or more significant like arthritic changes and things like that, that you don't get the high level strain injuries in those lower level horses that you do in performance horses. They don't often do tendons, they don't often get suspensory ligament injuries and things like that, because they're not doing that higher level of repetitive strain work. So you're probably more dealing with feet and a bit of arthritis and things like that in your lower level horses. And then in your higher level horses, it's like, well, you've got a huge range. So anything from sore feet to, repetitive ligament injuries and, galloping injuries, things like that. So it's, and certainly when you come to younger horses, you would be more looking at their conformation. Like, if they go lame quite early in their career, you might say, okay, well, do they have a degenerative joint disease or an OCD lesion or something that has happened, or like a cyst or something that actually occurred when that horse was developing from 0 to 1 year of age. And if they're going lame quite early on, they're the kind of things you look out for.
Say, it's probably never good if your foal is lame, is it?
Not ideal. Now, sometimes they're feet, but if your foal is lame, you call your vet straight away.
Straight away.
Definitely.
There you go, foal listeners.
Should never
lame foal, don't wait.
Nope.
Oh, God.
100%. No. Sick foal, anything, don't wait. They're like baby children. They crash and burn very quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, nasty. Should you ride a horse that's lame?
I think in general, ethically, you probably say no. I think it depends on the grade of lameness. I think if your horse is hobbling in from the paddock, please don't hop up on it. But I think that's pretty basic.
Yeah, no, please don't ride that.
It depends on what you're doing with the horse. Like, if it's a very subtle lameness and you can only detect it when they're doing strenuous work, then you don't do the strenuous work on them. You know, if it's something that's a slight gait or abnormality that the horse can tolerate, then yes, you can ride it. I think the main thing with that is going back to knowing what you're dealing with. If you know what it is, then you can gauge whether you can ride the horse. So if you've got a very small bit of arthritis there and you're managing it and they only have a subtle lameness, they've gone from being quite lame to very mildly lame, and you go, okay, that's acceptable. I know what I'm dealing with. I know what it is. When you don't know what it is and you're riding them and they're lame, then that's when you need to get your vet to step in, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay. And lameness tests, are they in a pre-purchase exam? So if I'm going to look to buy a new horse, like, how much of the lameness testing do we do?
Yeah, so we basically do all of the examination that I was talking about, except for going on to do the diagnostic nerve blocks and the tests. So the thing about a pre-purchase exam, like, it is looking at the whole horse, and you do a physical exam and all of that kind of stuff as well. And you look at the sort of the whole package, but pre-purchase exams are a risk assessment. They're not a lameness. We look at lameness and we look for lameness, but we're assessing risk and we're figuring out whether, if there is a subtle lameness, is that horse going to be able to cope with that in its chosen career? Do we know where that lameness is coming from? It's also not a full-on lameness exam when we're diagnosing where that lameness is coming from. Like, often I'll do a pre-purchase exam and I'll say, okay, it's lame left four, and they go, where? And I say, I don't know, because I need to do other things to tell. And sometimes I can say, okay, it's got pain on hoof testers, and it's sore on the circle, and it's sore on the hard, so likely chances are it's a foot, or it's got a bit of thin sole depth and that kind of thing. But really, we are there to assess risk. And that's pretty much it when it comes to pre-purchase. And then discuss the client's expectations and you go on from there.
And if the horse is a little bit lame, even if it's just like 1/10 lame, can I buy the horse still? Should I buy the horse still?
Depending on, like, again, it's a lot of factors. It's age, is that, like, is age, is the horse in current work? Is it in a high level work at the moment? If it's standing in a paddock and it's done nothing for 3 months and you bring it in and it's lame and you're like, ooh, what's that going to look like when you ride it 6 days a week? So very much depends on the work level of the horse, what you're asking the horse to do. Are you going to try and go around a 5-star track with it, or are you going for a hack down the road? So all of those things are taken into account. Don't buy a cripple. No.
Is the short answer to that one.
So I know, Christine, there have been, and I'm sure, Bex, you would have seen the same thing, where I've had a horse that's been vetted that's basically always been a sound horse, and in one part of the vetting, it goes a little bit lame. Now, I know that this horse is always sound. Do you have many clients that would say, can we go away and check that out and then, you know, bring the horse back in 2 weeks and re-vet it and see if it's still lame? Does that happen?
Yeah, that often happens. So, and that's why gaining a history on the horse and trying to get clarity and trying to be very forthcoming as a vendor is really important as well. You know, knowing that, like, what's this horse normally look like? This is really unusual for this horse. And I'll often go and do a vetting and say, listen, let's give the horse a chance. It could just be an off day. So I'll come back in 10 days and have a look, or send me a video of the horse trotting up to save you paying me to come back out and do it again. So they're often the kind of things we do. So you got to realize that a vetting is one day in time, and it's all based on that one day and that one time. And none of us vets have a crystal ball, unfortunately. And the horse could be perfectly sound and go on and be lame the next week, or it could be lame and you could compete successfully going forward. It just depends on your level of risk taking as well. That sort of comes into it too.
I really like
risk averse you are as an owner.
The way that you said it's just one day in time, because yeah, I think we've all been there. I'm sure many of the listeners have been as well, where the horse has been sound and been competing at a high level, doing really well. And then it's maybe just had cast in the stable, or it's banged a leg, or it slipped without you seeing it in the field, and then it's gone to do a vetting. And it can be really, really disheartening, you know, and really disappointing, especially if it's the perfect home and the perfect owners and you think this was really going to work. So it's great to have, say, the openness and relationship with the vets to be able to maybe give it a week or talk through to reassess the horse on another day.
Yeah, and I think the vendors have to be really open to that as well, and have that sort of bit of an open mind. And I think, unfortunately, some purchasers get a little bit worried that if they don't say yes on the day, that and a vendor might say, oh, well, I'll sell it tomorrow if you don't. And then in those kind of cases, you go, well, just walk away then if you're not willing to wait. And if the vendor isn't willing to wait, then maybe it's not the right horse for you, and just walk away. But otherwise, go back and have another look. That's no problem.
And then what are the vets looking for at a competition trot up?
I think it depends on what field you're competing in. Well, that's always the hardest trot up as well, because you're asking them to do a lot, and you're asking a lot off the horse, and the safety of the rider comes into account. So what we're really looking for is a horse that's fit to go out and do its job safely for both the rider and the welfare of the horse. So a very, very subtle lameness may be acceptable, but something, if I can see a consistent lameness in those horses, then that horse isn't going to be at its best to do its job on that day. And we have to actually look at them and say, well, this could affect this rider's welfare and the horse's welfare. So those ones are, you've got to be a little bit more astute with. If they're going to go around and do a dressage test, you're like, well, if there's a very subtle lameness, then you know that that's not going to affect that horse's welfare. And it may mean that that horse doesn't mark as well as it usually would, because it can't quite perform to the highest of levels. But it doesn't mean that you're giving it the tick to perform under pressure and affect its welfare. So very much depends on, what we're asking them to do.
And is there a difference, like, with the eventing in the first trot up versus the second trot up? So the first trot up, the horses have come in and they haven't competed yet, so they haven't done the dressage test. And whereas the second trot up, they've done the dressage, they've done the cross country, and then they're being trotted up before the show jumping. Can you tell us the difference between what you're looking for and what you will pass on the second trot up?
So I think if you've got a lame horse on the first trot up, then you've got that whole event ahead of you, and you're asking that horse to go out on a cross-country course and compete late. So that's definitely a red flag. On the second one, you're looking for that horse's recovery from what you've already asked it to do. So it could have been sound in the beginning, but did it knock a fence? Did it get hit on the way around? Did it wrench a joint? Did it do a tendon? Did it, like, so you're looking at it after you've put it under a certain amount of stress. So you want to make sure that that horse has recovered from what you've already asked it to do, so that it's able and capable to do this, the next phase of the event.
So it could be mildly stiff everywhere, but still be sound and capable of doing the competition, like finishing the show jumping.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really seeing all of these really small subtleties, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a risk assessment. And I think it depends on what you feel is acceptable and what you can. And it's always somebody's judgment. And that's why they have a couple of vets there. Mm. So you can discuss and you can collaborate. And it's not just one person's opinion.
I really don't envy the vets on that job.
Yeah, it's a tough job. It's a stressful one, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my God. So much to do with lameness. It's this never ending pool, isn't it?
You could probably talk for hours on it. Yeah. I could blab away about it for hours, days.
Oh God. And I think, I feel like between you and I, like when you come to my house, we've seen so many different types of lameness. I actually feel, I don't know about you, I have a very, very small Wheaties box vet degree because I have asked you so many questions the whole time. So like Bex, every time Christine comes over, she'll say,
I can describe the location of a lesion by just telling you and you know where I'm talking about. So I can use all my scientific terms with you now. It's far too blabbing
It's so terms. Educational. So I think that's the other thing is great. I really recommend to the listeners that if your vet is open to it, like ask them heaps of questions. And like I help Christine hold the x-ray plates, so I'm getting to know the order of the way that you have to hold the plates. And, you know, if they say a big word, like Christine, remember when you say effusion, I'm like, what's effusion? You're going, oh, it's swelling. Oh, and then what's the other one about the ultrasounds is hypoechoic and hypo something else.
Yeah. So it's like white and black.
yeah. So it's really fascinating. And I think just that education that we as riders and horse owners can receive just by asking the extra questions and being a bit more curious. And for me, I feel like now when I look at horses and I assess them, I've got so much more knowledge there. And then I in turn can give that to you. So when I see something that's not quite right, I know what I should be looking for, what I should list down and how to video it. And then I can give you as much information as possible. So it's we're very lucky to be able to pick the vet's brains, don't you think, Bex?
Oh, yeah, we are. Aren't we just?
Yeah.
Technology absolutely. Nowadays, all the absolutely. WhatsApp videos in the world before I call my vet out.
And I think it means you can rationalize it as well. Like if you can look at something, especially knowing your horse and knowing what their legs look like and that kind of thing, and knowing if something looks different, that's really what we're looking for. And knowing when to stop if it looks different. You go, oh, that's not usually there. Let's get that checked out. Or, you know, or let's give it a couple of days. And if it's still there, let's get it checked out. You know, and I think knowing what you're looking for and knowing what areas should have swelling or shouldn't have swelling, or it's really important, like a little bit of an anatomy review, things like that. They can be really helpful to owners to kind of not get so worried about things as well, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Not have a panic attack at the tiniest of things.
Oh, that still happens. That's okay. That's what we're there for, to calm everybody down.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that's
great. Understandable. The work that goes into all your horses. I don't know how any of you do it. I hate to live. I spend my whole time delivering sort of bad news to the people that have put all this effort and time and money and love into their horses. I think you guys probably have the harder job.
Oh, I don't believe we have the harder job. You have the harder job delivering the bad news.
Absolutely. yeah, absolutely. And oh no, well, that's amazing, Christine. Thank you so much. I'm sure we're all going to go back and, you know, check our horses' legs and make sure we know them all really well and read the anatomy book and look up, you know, trot them up. Actually, everyone should practice trotting them up and wear the right bra and shoes. And so
no thongs.
Oh my God. Yeah. So thank you so much. And we'll wrap up our show. And this has been the Equestrian Experience with myself, Amanda Ross, my co-host, Bex Mason, and this episode's guest, Christine Demery from Crown Equine Veterinary Services. To send in your questions for our up and coming episodes, enter our competitions and access our other episodes, please be sure to visit the equestrianexperiencepodcast.com. You can also follow us at Amanda Ross Equestrian and at Bex Mason SJ and find Crown Equine Veterinary Services at Crown_Equine. So until next time, have a great equestrian experience. See you guys.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.